double take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a cinema classics podcast produced by John DeSando.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Wayne Miller.
And this is Double Take.
Let's take two. We're talking about some one-eyed pirate. that's
and
pale blue eye is.
Let's throw in also one about a little mechanical witch.
Okay, little Megan. Oh, God love her. Yeah, she. Two great movies on the same day.
Yeah.
Two. Lots of fun. You know how I like mysteries.
Yeah.
Pale Blue Eye. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, look, you've got two things going for it. First of all, Christian Bale.
Yes.
All right, kind of underplaying the detective.
Very much so, but you can identify with him.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah, and then you have Edgar Allan Poe in the mix.
Yes. Young actor, last name Melling.
Yes.
That has done some things, and a rather strange-looking young man in a way, or sharp-featured, I think you said in your review, but he... But also a couple other ones. One more, kind of a cameo, Robert Duvall.
Yes.
Looking real grizzled. And, of course, it's in 1830s. And then one of my favorite actresses, Gillian Anderson.
Hey.
Everybody remembers her from The X-Files. But also she did a great job as Margaret Thatcher before. And also recently, a thing about three first ladies, she played Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah, and,
people.
And, you know, bringing... Duvall in is probably an attempt to liven things up a bit, but they don't give him enough to do.
And he helps provide some of the clues to the mystery, and this is 1830 at West Point. And I thought Edgar Allan Poe, who was a cadet there, and I thought he was there longer than the seven months. But how he got a commission for that, because he'd already been in the military, believe it or not, and attained the rank of Master Sergeant in the Army.
What a pain in the neck he must have been. Can you believe him being restrained militarily?
Oh, my, definitely not one. And, of course, in the course of the movie, he kind of talks about how he was basically picked on by the other cadets.
I know. Well, he had already been a published poet.
Yeah.
So right away, he was a target for the tough boys.
Which made it kind of interesting that he's kind of accepted into this group, kind of almost like is asked by Bale, who plays a retired New York City detective.
Yeah.
And, and very early on, you find out the facts you need to know about him, that he was very successful, brought down a lot of gangs and grisly murderers, and the but also that he had lost his wife.
Yes,
his wife had died.
Yeah,
and supposedly his daughter.
You know, you're right. There, the circumstances under which he was asked there. There are other people who have been detectives who have solved mysteries. Unfolds and later on as to actually why. So I thought that was an interesting part of it, something that hadn't crossed my mind till we got there. I said, okay, I can see that happening. But it's the photography, and you spied it. It's Western, actually Pennsylvania, that's photographed it, but it's supposed to be the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
It's beautiful with the snow against the gray,
and
dark buildings.
This kind of a peak or whatever that plays a role later in the movie, down this big crevice and everything, but very good. And the interesting thing, Poe is credited with writing what was essentially the first detective story.
Oh, he is the one who modernized it and popularized it.
Yes, from Murders in the Rue Morgue.
Yes.
And with the detective. And, of course, I remember it. I've seen three different versions of that, and one going back. I think they called it Phantom of the Rue Morgue, one of the film adaptations. But a really, really strange one starring Bela Lugosi. The trainer.
Yeah,
of
one
the
of our favorites.
Ape. Yeah.
and Poe had written The Telltale Heart.
Yes.
Which there is some basis in here. You can hear traces of it.
Right.
Particularly the heart separate from the body.
Yeah. Separated by not once but twice.
I know. Yeah. And, well, the Academy is very is feeling very fussy about this. They're just beginning to be recognized
right.
as an entity, and they don't want a murder.
Right.
Or, as it turns out, they think it's a suicide, which could be a murder, and that's what they're worried about.
Yes, yes. Of course, Bale's character is brought in on the case by a couple of very strange army officers. That one played by Timothy Spall.
Yes, I wanted more of Spall, too.
Oh, I know. And both guys looked like toads. But
they did.
The one thing that that kind of intrigues me, this film, and we watched it on Netflix – and it doesn't look like it's going to get a theatrical run.
Oh, I know.
Which surprises me with an established actor like Christian Bale, and even like a cameo by Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
And with the cinematography, a very interesting case.
Well, you know,
I won't give it away, but it really, I think one review I read said something that it takes a deft twist, you know.
Yeah. You and I have been here at Christmas when the package has arrived from Netflix, and our jaws drop at how much money they spend on sending gifts to film critics. Netflix is awash in money.
Yeah.
So it can afford this kind of a movie with this kind of cast and continue to run it. Okay, so how do we make the segue to this and Little Megan?
Well, you know, tell me. I'm surprised. maybe because she doesn't have a heart, you know? Maybe she's like the tin man.
Well, I think there's something gothic about both.
Yes, yeah.
And this little lady, Megan, is taking over the Billboard. I'm going to tell you, it is done so well. Millions it's made. So it strikes a chord with our moviegoers.
Yes, it does. Obviously, it struck a chord with us when the management of the Phoenix Theater had to come and ask me to keep it down. I was getting too loud for the other 8 people in the theater.
It turned our adolescent button on.
Oh, it did, because we were laughing and carrying on. And I tell you, the voice was supplied by one young actress, but then a young actress who did a superb job as the little robot girl, Megan.
Yeah.
And
Amy Donald.
And she, I mean, when she was kind of like learning to dance and then started flipping around, but the scene that got me just chuckling like crazy when she tells that little boy, it's time to run.
Now's your time to run.
And she's running through the woods like some sort of rampaging boar through the woods after this boy on all fours, you know, loping along.
Well, one of the things that turns on the audience and people going to this is the dance sequence.
Yes.
Because we're not used to AIs dancing so fluidly as she's doing. And doing, it's kind of a TikTok bit.
Yes.
And she dances in the strangest moves that kids are imitating it now.
Yeah, and the girl must be at ballet training, dance training,
yes,
or whatever, because unless they use some CGI on her, I think it must be her.
Yeah.
And she goes kind of crazy. And of course, the whole premise of the film that the heroine of the film, this woman who works for a toy company that makes these little animatronic toys, and like you send the little pooping like little dolls.
Yeah, they've got the little ones with teeth. Their little teeth.
And which was really kind of fun to begin with. But anyhow, her sister and her sister's husband die in a car accident, and the woman has to take over or guardianship of the little girl.
One of the things I like you're introducing, and a notion I just had with recently, is that she is not meant to be a mother.
No, she did not want to be a mother. No.
So here she is.
She didn't know what to do. And so her company and her team of technicians, scientists, whatever, developed this little robot girl, and they decided to try it out, that she'd be the little companion to her niece. The other one that's really hit social media quite a bit And I think, is it on Netflix Wednesday?
Yes, I think
series?
So. I think
you know, the little girl from the Addams Family, and she does a dance at some school dance that a lot of kids are mimicking. Too.
Yeah.
The same type of thing, you know, the throwing yourself around or whatever.
So what do you think the popularity of Megan is? I mean, I think there's something about AI that piques our imagination and our fears.
Yes.
You know, our machines taking over. If anybody uses your GPS and gets used to her, to Siri, whoever it is, giving you directions, you get an idea of how some people are really annoyed.
Well, the thing of it is, it really, after I saw Megan, really, and even beforehand, seeing the trailers and knowing the premise of the movie, that I really made me think of, and of course, the first one came to mind was AI, Artificial Intelligence, Spielberg's movie, with the little robot boy, who basically really just wanted to be, you know, a kid, and it was more of a kind of a takeoff on Pinocchio. But then it made me think of all the different movies dealing with dolls or ventriloquist dummies that come to life.
And of course, TV, one of our favorites, Twilight Zone.
Yes. In fact, it happened to be on Thursday night on MeTV at 12:30. I stayed up to watch it with Telly Savalas and little talking Tina, his stepdaughter's doll. And you can't help, and this is what always cracks me up about those type of movies. They have a great sarcastic sense of humor. The little dolls, you know, and just so menacing when they blink their like little lifeless eyes, you know, kind of like Megan does here in this film. But it's and ventriloquist dummies have always been a big one too. They basically are alive, and a couple of them I remember, they take over their human person.
Yeah. And there's an article today about Megan in the paper. It might have been in the Times. But anyway, about the care with which they take to develop this kind of a character.
Right.
And emphasizing particularly the dance is somehow symbolic of the terror.
Yeah.
Because we're just not used to our machines being that fluid and that human-like.
And fast, like running on all fours through the woods, flipping around, you know, doing cartwheels or whatever.
Well, you got to love, you and I, of course, always love when the bullies come on.
Because and they come up and turn the bully like this one.
And you know the bully is doomed.
Yes.
And she does a super job with him.
Yes. Oh, she does. Yeah. And basically just chases him out in front of a speeding truck that runs him over.
Yes.
Oh, great movie.
We need to get back to Pale Blue. For our for people who are now on our Double Take podcast.
Well, the one thing, and I just seen it for the second time.
Pale Blue
recently,
Eye.
Yeah. There was another 10 years ago with John Cusack. Playing Edgar Allan Poe, and it's later in his career, or close to his death, you know, it was in the late 1840s, whereas Pale Blue Eye takes place in 1830. But I believe in Baltimore that there's a series in this movie called The Raven, a series of murders based on murders and deaths in his stories. And so the police call him in, you know, to investigate. Once again, very interesting. I'm always kind of like taken with some of these movies that are dark, you know, showing, you know, like that recent one, Enola Holmes, that we saw.
Yes,
it was so dark on the streets of London that it was hard to see. Fortunately, The Pale Blue Eye, since a lot of the action takes place during the day. You know, so it's at least...
And the white snow lightens up the screen.
Yeah.
And you and I know that one of the things that we do, if we have to watch it on my screen at home, if it's Netflix, is that we make sure we have the closed caption on.
Oh, definitely.
Because many, along with the darkness you're talking about, is the kind of sotto voce, just really, you know, under
almost
what you can hear.
Well, like you had mentioned, Christian Bale really kind of underplays this role in a way. And sometimes... kind of mumbles his lines or says
yes.
It's so low that it's hard to kind of make out, which was very different from Poe's character because he was loud and boisterous, you know, and you could definitely hear him. But and that was a good pairing, I think, Bale and Melling, in those
yes.
roles. The grizzled old retired police detective that Bale's character played.
And I need to notice that our director, Scott Cooper,
yes,
had already used Bale a couple of times, Out of the Furnace,
yes,
and
yep.
Hostiles.
Yes.
And I liked Hostiles. I got to talk about a dark Western.
So kind of like how Scorsese likes using De Niro.
Yes.
Here, Bale's found, I think, a good director.
Yes.
And
I've heard that Christian Bale flies in on his helicopter and you yeah. can't talk to him. And all that, and even if it's true, the guy, do you remember him, really elevated Batman.
He was
as an actor.
Very, very good Batman. And another one that I've seen recently, I think the title was The Fighter, with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah, good one.
True story, Wahlberg playing Bale's brother. And Bale in that one was really emaciated in that one movie where he lost so many pounds or whatever. He's kind of like, in a way, he's kind of like a British version of De Niro, that he could do a number of different roles and he physically gets himself into the roles, either gaining weight or losing weight.
But, and you know, too, Bale doesn't always pick the best movies. Most recent example being Amsterdam.
Okay.
You know, that's not a great movie. I sometimes think of him as kind of a lower level Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes.
That kind of a super actor. But Lewis, of course, carefully selects his movies. He rarely has a bummer in all of his. But both of them are fine actors. And as you were mentioning, for Scorsese with De Niro and now with Scott Cooper with Christian Bale, these are directors who have attracted the top actors of our time. And it's a pretty good bet that the movie's going to be interesting.
Yes, and this one definitely is.
So Wayne Miller, look, we've unusually chosen two films today that are out this week.
Two totally different
films. Totally.
I have to admit, I kind of questioned your judgment. And as much as I liked Megan, but there's so much I also liked about The Pale Blue Eye.
Yes, I know.
But both of them different types of entertaining movies that I think most people would really enjoy.
Well, you know, because we were effectively bounced out of the theater because we were being too boisterous and adolescent, I thought we have to say something about Meg.
And of course, the poor young guy says, "I know you're film critics." But that certainly didn't give us a free pass to act.
I think they put something in the hot dog for us.
You had the hot dog.
They're going to start putting saltpeter in there. All right, Wayne Miller.
Okay.
Here we have The Pale Blue Eye.
Yep.
And Megan. What do you suggest for our audience?
To see them. If you want a good murder mystery on a cold winter night snuggle up and watch it on Netflix, because you won't find it in the theater.
Nope.
The Pale Blue Eye.
Pale Blue Eye.
On the other hand, if you want to go out and have a good time at the movie theater, definitely Megan. And Megan's one that should be seen on the big screen.
And let me add to that. Remember what we told you. Megan is a comedy.
Yes.
I don't think the people in the audience who reported us to management had figured out that we're laughing because it is a comedy.
It is funny. And really not that many. There are, of course, scary scenes and also murder scenes.
Wayne,
but not that bad.
PG-13.
Yes. Bring your kids. They might want a Megan doll for next Christmas.